Bereshis chapter 12. So in this chapter, we have a new beginning. And we have to discuss a little bit about the division of the chapters here because it's important. The beginning of chapter 12 is also the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha. V'yomer Hashem el Avram Lech Lecha. It's important to notice, and there's something similar going on in the end of Parshas Bereshis, beginning of Parshas Noach. Over there, the chapters didn't correspond to the division of the Parshas HaShavua. Over here they do. But there's something important here to think about and to understand, which is that in some sense there is a continuation, and in another sense there's really a new beginning here, and there's a reason and a logic for why the chapters and the Parshas all understood that they should start a new story here. So the sense of a continuation is, of course, we had the list of the 10 generations from Noach all the way to Terach. And then we had a beginning of a new list with a header, Va'ele told this Terach. These are the descendants of Terach. It had the story of Terach's three children, very similar to how in the previous list Noach had three children, as we discussed. But then things that are not similar, which is that we had the story of so we should understand this rest of the story. We had the grandson of Terach, which is Loit, son of Haran. We had the story of Haran dying. And when his father was still alive, maybe that's the first time something like this is recorded in the history here. And then we had another important story, which is that Avram and Nachor, who are the two remaining sons of Terach, took wives, and they have names, Sura and Milcah, and a description who this Milcah was. And then a third important prefatory thing, which we had already, is that Surai had no children. So those are the just setting up the family background of Terach in the previous chapter. Then we had another thing. So you can put that as sort of the end of this is giving us the very basic genealogical background of who the people, who the characters of the next stories will be. And all these people will show up in the next stories. Avram, Surai, and Loit, also important. And in some sense, even Nachor. But well, finally, when we get all the way to Yaakov, who marries the daughter of Lavan, the son of Nachor, and so on. Now we have a story that's explicitly something that really should connect with the next story, which is that Terach and his whole family, and all his remaining family, which now replaced Haran with his son Loit, but Avram and Loit, not Nachor. Doesn't say what happened with Nachor. Nachor stayed, we do know when Nachor stayed in where they came from, apparently. But Terach takes part of his family and travels with the intent to get to Eretz Canaan. They do not manage to get there, and therefore they stay in Haran. This is the beginning of the Terach's journey. And as we explained, that this seems to be, we can see it as a continuation also of the story of the Refluga, of the story of the 70 children of Noach, which is the story of the people, the men, spreading out all over the world and each establishing their family and their language and their community and their place. But what's the important story here is that this same journey, in some sense, starts again, and it's very explicit that when we come to chapter 12, we start with God commanding or telling Avram to travel from his land, from his birthplace, from his father's home, to a land he will show him. And that land, we will discover in a minute later, is Eretz Canaan. And there's a very important question that every commentator has asked, which is that it seems like there was already an intent to go there. Terach already was trying to go there. Here, of course, we have the story Terach dies, and then we get this commandment to Avram to go to Canaan. But in reality, Terach has already went there. Maybe just the story is meant to imply that he died on the way. Of course, if you actually add up the years, you see that it doesn't add up. Terach should still be alive at this time when Avram is journeying to Canaan, at least in the first time, if we count that he was 75 and we count up how old Terach was when he gave birth to Avram, he should still be alive. So there's a difficulty here, and like a chronological difficulty and difficulty of making sense of the order of the story. And it seems very clear, and this is what the people that divided the chapter and the parasha here picked up on. It seems very clear that the intent of the book here, of the way the book is organized, is to create a split in exactly this place. And this is why I think it's correct to put this chapter split here and so on. In other words, although in one sense, of course, this story is just a continuation of the previous story, in all of the senses that we discussed, in another sense, there is a new chapter beginning, a new kind of story really beginning, and it's pretty obvious that the story of Avram, and later known as Avram, and his children become a totally different kind of story in which takes up the rest of Sefer Bereishis. And the first move of this story being different is with Avram being the first one to receive an explicit command, an explicit ma'amar, a word from God, telling him to travel from his father's land and giving him all these blessings and so on that he will see. And it seems like this is an important division to be made here. And we have to think about what it means, like what this different kind of story, what this new kind of beginning means. And of course, the first thing we have is this same kind of structure, the same kind of, call it the same kind of beat, which we had in the story of Bereishis. We had it somewhat in the story of Noach, which is that there's Vayomer, Vayihi. Vayomer Hashem el Avram lech lecha, and immediately Vayelech Avram kasha debrei elav Hashem. So Avram follows in this path of the people who are like the light, like all the things created in Shesh Bereishis, like Noach. Hashem tells them something and they do it. And he also has something which also in the same way relates, which is that this command includes also a blessing. Now, of course, it's a more interesting blessing or a more specific blessing than the previous blessings. We had very general blessings to Adam, to the animals even, to Noach, about, and all the blessings were always about procreation. So that, in that sense, this is a continuation of the same blessing. It says, Ve'eschol ha'gogodol, we'll become a great nation. This is more or less what Hashem told of already Adam and Noach. Of course, in their case, it was something very general because all their descendants are all of mankind. And Avram's descendants are not all of mankind. And the Pasuk notices this and right away says, after he tells him that he will become blessed by this, he finishes by saying, so you're only one of the families. So this is talking after the Raflug, after there are many families. And Mishpachos, by the way, in Tanakh, almost generally has the same meaning as Am. So there isn't like this distinction we're used to. Like there's families and nations are comprised of tribes and families, like we even have later with the Shvatim, all comprise one nation maybe. Over here, and originally also Am, the word Am has the same meaning. It's maybe there's some slight difference, but has almost the same exact meaning as Mishpachos, as Mishpacha. Mishpacha in Tanakh means a nation or a family, or the word for nation, we use it for nation and for family, have the same exact meaning. So when it talks about families of the earth, it's talking about nations, which are originally families. Of course, you can understand why it's the same thing. But it's giving him a new thing. So there's this new, and this is weird, things are very different, right? We discussed that even Noach, when he's being saved, and all the other people were not saved, there isn't this of like, we're going to save the righteous one and everyone else not. It's more like, there is one human who remains to be saved, and this is in the sense of, God didn't want to destroy all of humanity in the end. He did leave one. And when they talk about Avram being blessed and with him being blessed everyone else, but maybe by him, right? Through you, there's already a recognition that there is other people whose story are not here. They're sort of outside. Like we said, they can continue the story of the previous chapter, maybe in their own books or something. But here there's a new story where there's like this recognition and understanding that there is a nation, well, a great nation with a great name, a blessed one. And then there is other people, and there might be people who are mikal elcha, there might be people who are cursing you, and of course, this is all also a very general word, just like the beruch, the klula of the nochash, right, the klula of the earth, of Adam and Cain and Canaan. These are the cursed people, right? If it's already Canaan, you have this like concept of a cursed people, and people who curse you, and curse just means wish you ill, right? People that are not on your side, they will be cursed, or the ill will come to them. But in purposes, that all the families of the earth should be blessed by you. So that's the first statement and in a very important framing for the entire story of Avram. Now we have a comment which gives Avram's age for when he leaves Choron. And of course, it makes it sound that Choron is Beis Avicha, is where his father's house is, and even his Moeladich, his birthplace. Of course, that seems to be incorrect if you read until now, because it seems like Terach already moved from Ur Kaznim to Choron, so that seems to have been his birthplace. There's different interpretations of what's going on here. But in any case, and this is another thing that we should notice here. And now we get the story of Avram traveling with his wife Sarah, with Lot, with all of their belongings, with everything that belongs to them, including living belongings. That's what nefesh means. Remember, there's many interpretations of nefesh, but it just means like we're made from Parshas Bereishis. Nefesh is something that is alive. So it could mean people or animals or anything. and they travel to Canaan. Now we have the beginnings of, and this is again the thing which will sort of go on the entire story of Sefer Bereishis, the entire story of the whole Tanakh in some, the whole Torah in some sense, of the whole Tanakh in some sense, or the whole history, which is the history of the children of Avram in some sense, which is the establishment of Avram in this land, Canaan. So this is very interesting. So like this travel, and again, this is to distinguish the travels of Avram from his family. In some sense, all of humanity has left their birthplace and moved to new places. But Avram has this very particular thing, and maybe even a more eternal thing, where he's establishing these places, and they remain there. We'll see in a minute how one way we could see this. So the first thing is, he comes to a place called Shechem, or it says Mekoyim Shechem, maybe it means a place which will be later known as Shechem, otherwise also known as Eilein Moira, seems to be the same place. And another note, this was when the Canaani was there. This is, an interesting note. But in any case, remember Canaan, the son of Ham from the previous chapters, his children Canaan were still there. So Avram is coming not to an empty country. This is, of course, it's called Eretz Canaan already here. So the story isn't that he came to an empty land. There was Canaan there, and he is their guest in some sense. He's not. This is another important feature of Avram Avinu, at least in his entire lifetime. Maybe later things change, but at least in this stage, and I think that's the important point of this story, he's a guest. He's a traveler. He has a birthplace, but he's not in his birthplace, and now he's living at the mercy of other people, right? He's sort of their guest, whether he's taking literally their place or not, but it's not his land, not at this time. And then we have another first thing, which is Vayera Hashem El Avram. This is the first time this language says, of course, again, we could talk about God appearing to Noach, already appearing to Adam, maybe appearing to Cain, maybe appearing to Noach. It doesn't say the word he appeared. It just says Adam, for example, heard God walking in the garden. There isn't this word of appearing, of Vayera Hashem. And you could always say this is because it was sort of natural, it's normal, and it's true in the logic, within the logic of those stories. There isn't like a situation where God is not revealed and a situation where he reveals himself. It's just like, okay, he's another thing somehow, just that, yeah, he was walking in the garden and now we noticed him or something like that. But now we do have Vayera El Hashem. So this, again, just like we have now the recognition of there being different nations, we also have recognition of a world in which sometimes God is not present. Very important. We don't really tend to notice this. We tend to speak of the us as like the situation where God is always present to them and so on. But the moment you have this word that says Vayera El Hashem, that's a recognition that in general God is not present. Maybe we have this already earlier in the Dara Flug of Vayera El Hashem, but again, there isn't this like explicit thing of God revealing himself to a person. And now we have he revealed himself to him in Canaan and told him and made him a promise. And we'll later have more revelations, and people talk about them more later, but this is the first one. And God gives him, reveals himself to him and gives him a promise that I will give your descendants this land. That's all. And now what does he do? This is another first thing. And we have to distinguish and watch exactly why it's a first. He creates a Mizbeach. We discussed already by Nech that there's a difference between just bringing a carbon like Hevel and Kayan did and creating a Mizbeach, which is a space like the beginning of a Mikdash on which a carbon is brought. But now we have a new thing besides for that there's Mizbeach in a specific place and to a specific revelation of God. I think that's how it has to be read. He built a Mizbeach to the God who has revealed himself to him. And the logic here is the logic of Mizbuchos in the entire Sefer Bereishis, and in general, I think the ancient understanding, when a God reveals himself to you in a specific place, maybe in a specific form, there's different forms in which God reveals himself or different ways, and each in the place is itself already a form, like in this way, he created, built the Mizbeach in that place, which is another way of saying to the kind of revelation that he had here. And this is the beginning of what we call later holy places. Holy places are places in which God has revealed himself and in a specific place. And the Mizbeach is something that preserves that, in some sense, preserves that revelation of God. So there's a Mizbeach, and apparently this Mizbeach, I mean, we know there was a Mikdash in Shechem much later for a very long time. And apparently that's said to be the Mizbeach that Avram established in Shechem to God who has revealed himself to him there and promised him the land. Okay? Then there's another story, which is sort of, its point is also apparently the same exact point, just for another Mizbeach. He moves from there to a new place, east of Beisail. And of course, Beisail is another place, very famously, where there was a Mikdash later, of course, story of Yidav Menavat and so on, but there was a place there, and he makes a Mizbeach there. an air of another word which we didn't have before, or we did have it for Dayd Enish, but another word. It says Vayikra b'shem Hashem. He called in the name of Hashem, of the name of Yitgevavkan. We don't know exactly what this means. There's later people think that it means he told people about God existing. I don't think it literally means that. Vayikra b'shem Hashem means he invoked the name of Hashem. I think that the most simple thing would be something like this. 5 minutes ago, a second ago, he made a mezbech in Shechem. So we didn't have to invoke him. God has revealed himself to him, and therefore he's responding by creating a mezbech to the God who has revealed himself to him. In Bethel, God has not revealed himself to him, or at least not yet. So therefore he has to call the name of God, and calling is like invoking God on that place, and then that's how the mezbech received the holiness, received what we call Ashras HaShechinah, received this presence of God in it. And now in all of this, we have the story of Avram traveling from from north to south. And Avram, and it's like the point of the story is that he's not really a resident in any of these places. He doesn't live, and he's not a citizen. He doesn't belong to any of this. He's traveling. He seems to make these mizbeachs, but somehow he gets permission to do that. But he's still a stranger. And like the pasuk in Kisuvai, according to a simple pshat, says Arami Ovedov. He was from Aram, and he was a lost person. Avram himself says, "Kasher hisu oisi alehim." When the gods, or the God has made me lost, made me wander. So he's sort of wandering. And the next part of his wandering is a story which continues into the next chapter. I'm going to cut it up in a little bit just because I'm running out of time. But really, the chapter should go on until he gets back, because I think it's an important circle in this story. In other words, it's the story of Avram going down to Mitzrayim because there is a famine in Canaan, and this is, of course, a story which we'll know later will happen again and again. Canaan is a land prone to famine more than Egypt, and he goes to Egypt to eat. And then the important thing is that this story has a circle. He comes back. After he comes back, he goes back the exact same place, all the way from, he was going from north to south, and then he goes back from south to north to Bethel, to the exact place in which his tent and the mizbeach was before. And again, Vayikra Sham Avram Hashem Hashem, he calls or invokes the name of God in the same place. And that seems to be important. It's what I was saying a second ago, that the mizbeach that Avram makes is not a temporary thing. It's something that is established in a place, and he himself goes back to it because it's already established as some kind of place. The story of Avram and Sarai going down to Mitzrayim is also a story that, of course, famously happens two more times, to Avram and to Yitzchak. And the story is, and apparently this is meant to illustrate, or at least one of the things it illustrates, is this exact being a stranger, this being a guest. And when you're a stranger, you have, in some sense, no protection of the law. And the biggest protection the law gives, or one of the biggest protections, is basically two important things that belonging to a city gives you. One is not being murdered. This is what we saw the story by Cain already, how Cain said, when I'm going to travel, I'm not going to have my own place. Anyone who finds me will kill me. So that's what happens with someone who's a traveler, who doesn't have the protection of one city. The point of a city is that people get together for defense. So if someone kills one of them, they're going to avenge him. And here, Avram, that's probably also part of the bracha that he is given for traveling, that God will protect him, similar to what Cain got. But the second thing, which is also important, of course, is connected to the first thing, is the protection of your wife. So another thing that a city gives you is monogamy, or the word is not monogamy, the word is the ability to keep your wife, to protect your women. And of course, when a city is conquered or so on, that's the first thing you lose. You lose the ability to have your wife be your wife. And this is something that we have had also earlier in the story of the Bnei Elohim and the Bnei Sa'adam, which was some sense of the deterioration, or not existing at all, of this establishment, this thing where there isn't, where people can are entitled or can be assured of their wives. And there were these Bnei Elohim who just took whichever wives they wanted, probably also married ones, although they don't recognize marriage. So that's the story. And the story is that comes down to Mitzrayim, and he says to Sarai, I know that you're a beautiful woman, and the Mitzrayim will see that you're my wife, so therefore I will lose both of these things. I will both be murdered, and they will take you. In other words, I will lose my wife and my life. So therefore he has a solution, and it's a very interesting solution, and how it exactly works is also complicated. What it means is that he can't really behave in a sovereign way, even over his wife. What he has to do is pretend that she's a sister. In other words, he doesn't have her ownership, or whatever that you call this relationship over her. And they're still going to take his wife, but at least they won't destroy his relationship with her. They always, at least they won't, they won't kill him. That's, people see this as sometimes something very not nice that Avram does. Like, okay, so maybe he should have died protecting her or something. I think the point is that you when you're in a strange place, and this is maybe nowadays we have things that different. Of course, if you go in a real lose civilization, then the same thing happens. You lose whatever, like they don't recognize your marriage. So this is exactly what happens. And he says, Ibn Khaizad is like, what? Oh, like he could maybe try to kill for her, but he won't get anywhere with that. So that's the story. And the story is that somehow he still, he does have protection. That's exactly the story, that God protects him even in this situation of a stranger. So what happens is he comes to Mitzrayim, the Mitzrayim see her, and they say, this is Vehalu Esel Pare. They describe her beauty to Pare. And Pare, who is the king, and this is what happens. If you're the king, you're the sovereign, you, all the women and all the people, everything belongs to you. And since they see Avram as her brother, they give him, they pay him sort of the bride price. I think that's what it's meant to understand. So like, of course, the thought here is, so they're not entirely stealing her in some sense. They are paying for her in some way. But that's the story. And now what the main point and the reason why this story exists here is to say this part, Ve'naga Hashem es Pare. So, and Pare gets afflicted by great afflictions. Nega just means an affliction. It could mean tzaras, but doesn't necessarily have to mean that. The point is he gets some punishment for taking Sora Aisha's Avram's wife. And of course, Pari doesn't know, or at least pretends to not know, that she's his wife. Of course, if he would be a good person, he might have figured out that also. And Pari calls Avram, and he has this dialogue. This is like the kind of dialogue that we'll see again, will repeat itself. Pari tells Avram, what have you done? Why haven't you told me that she's your wife? Why did you tell me she's her sister? So take your wife and go. And of course, Avram doesn't answer. This is another something you should notice. There's no reply. Avram doesn't answer. Avimelech, remember, he replied. And apparently the implication is that Avimelech is slightly more civilized than Pare. And there's someone to talk to, and he acts in similar ways, but there's more the relationship, and even either he's more civilized or the relationship that Avram has with Avimelech is a different relationship that he has with Pare. With Pare, he has no discussion, like he's happy to be alive. And he takes him, and Pare command, gives him people to follow him, and they leave him. And then we have the rest of the story. Avram, now, including all the presents, all the gifts that he got from Pare, is now richer, and he goes back to Canaan richer than he left.